Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston.
And what a guest do we have for you today? Well, let's just say she is the one and only head of SEO comms at Wix, Crystal Carter. Hi, Crystal.
Hello. Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here. Obviously, a big fan of you and the show. So thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. Well, just for the people who are watching this or listening to this podcast that doesn't know who you are, could you give us a bit of a tour of where, when and where you started in the industry to where you are now?
Great. So I've done marketing throughout my career, and I've done SEO throughout my career. I didn't always call it SEO, but I was doing citations and page optimization and migration tasks and things for many, many years before I sort of decided to specialize in SEO. I worked agency side. I've worked freelance. I've done my own projects. I've worked with public sector. I've worked with private sector. I've worked with lots of different things. And I'm currently the head of SEO communications at Wix. And as part of my role, I do a lot of public speaking. So I've spoken at Brighton SEO, I've spoken at MozCon, I've spoken at SMX, I've spoken at lots of different things. I also run a podcast with Morty Oberstein called SERPs Up SEO Podcast. And we also do monthly webinars, we write articles, lots of different things like that. But when people ask me generally what is my role at Wix, I tend to explain that my role is to communicate the value of Wix to SEOs and communicate the value of SEO to Wix users and other folks as well. But SEO communication and SEO education is really key to my role, as well as me generally being a busybody and getting involved with lots of SEO projects within the team wherever I can.
Brilliant. So within your role at Wix, what challenges have you faced so far?
So I think one of the things that was a big challenge for me personally was that I had come from a smaller team and then was in sort of, you know, we are a global team. So our team is worldwide, and the customers that we serve are worldwide. And we, within Wix, we have a situation where we have a lot of people who are one website and they're looking after one website, but we have to make sure that our tools are available for people of lots of different strata of like abilities and of capabilities and also of needs. So we have tools that are suitable where people can get great results from, if they've got very little SEO knowledge, where they can still sort of get good results if they're making, you know, solid content. And then we have tools that allow, you know, people who are experts like yourself to really get in there and really, really optimize and be like super competitive where they need to be as well. And we've got sort of, you know, dev things as well. So I think that moving from thinking about a single client to thinking about a sort of community of clients and a community of people who are engaging with our products and with what we do was a challenge, but it's a challenge that I absolutely love and welcome. It's been so incredible to work with our team, to work with our growth team who manage our blog, to work with our product team who build our products. I know I'm waxing poetical, but it's really been a great experience.
Yeah, I know when I was on the SEO board, and yes. The thing that struck me is the ability to make a positive impact for millions and millions and millions of businesses. And right. I think for me, it's not just a silo thing where you're doing something, it's going to make a positive experience for that one business. Right. Whereas you do something in the back end or do something with Wix, and it's going to potentially positively impact, what is it, over 200 million businesses now?
Yeah, so there's 220 million users on Wix who are building websites and optimizing. And when we update structured data for different sites, it impacts them all. When we recently announced that we have included Index Now as part of the sort of Wix SEO tool set, and essentially that means that users have to do nothing but they can submit. But as soon as they connect their website to the Wix SEO setup checklist, they'll connect to Google Search Console and they'll connect everything there. And as soon as they get that sorted, they are connected to Index Now. And that means every time they update a piece of content on their website, that it's going to get pinged to the Index Now network, which includes Bing and Naver and lots of different things around there. And I don't think a lot of people realize that Bing also powers things like DuckDuckGo, and stuff like Ecosia and Yahoo and things like that as well. But that's a great resource for indexing generally, both across Bing and other search engines. And it's also something that certainly I remember having a go at trying to do that individually. And I think that, it wasn't exactly straightforward. I was like, is it done? I'm not sure. So it's great to make that available to lots of people, and to be able to help them to optimize their sites, just straight off the bat, like already built in.
Yeah, there's, I mean, lots and lots of SEOs contact me all the time about, I just can't get my pages indexed, you know? And
yeah,
even when they try tools and they just can't get them indexed. And
right.
Well,
right.
Honestly, probably most of the time they shouldn't be indexed, but
right, this is true. I think that's the other thing. It's like I've talked about this case study before, but you know, indexing is not a right. I think people have to remember, like, it's not a right. Google doesn't owe you indexing, so you kind of have to show them that the pages are worth indexing, and you also have to make sure that they're worth indexing. I had a client who at one point was indexing loads of so they had a login thing. It was an e-commerce site, and you went to the page and you logged in your account, and then you got an account page. All those account pages, it didn't have any personally identifiable information, but all those account pages were indexable. And all of them were like crawlable and stuff. And I was like, no, like, shut it down. Because basically, you know, they were saying, oh, we're not getting indexed. It's like, well, you're wasting their time over here. You're wasting their time with thousands and thousands and thousands of these indexable pages. Those don't need to be indexed at all. Take them off of the index. They don't need to be searched at all. So take them all off. And so we did that, and we moved around a few other things as well. But absolutely, one of the things when people talk about, you know, indexing trouble, is the first thing I do is clean up the crawl. One of the other things that we see is that sometimes there was one, and the last time I checked this particular CMS, I'm not going to name it. It was not Wix, but it was a different CMS. I won't name names, because we keep it classy here, but they were creating essentially a product feed for everything that had a category page. And so there was one product in it, it was making a whole feed for it. And if you had made a category page for it and then you didn't have products in it, it still had a feed in it and the feed was crawlable. So one of the things you can do is go through and see all, which feeds are active, which feeds are not active. And if there's no products in there, if you don't even sell that anymore, get rid of that page. You don't need it. So cleaning up your crawl is super important to indexing. And it shows willing. So because if Google's crawling your site, and I talk about this, there's a video I have with Martin Split, with Google, talking about like a crawling issue that we had with redirect chains. It was just like redirecting to a redirect to a redirect to a it's awful. But if you're finding, if Google is coming to your site and they're seeing that like, oh, this is broken, or this page is useless, or this doesn't work, like eventually they'll just give up. So you need, if you want your pages to be indexed, you have to show them that, you know, you've spent time making sure that things are indexable, or that the indexable pages are things that they actually should and want to see. So yeah, I think it's definitely a challenge that people have, but it's worth investing some time in understanding what works and what doesn't work in terms of indexability, because you can't rank if you're not indexed, and it's really important to make sure that you cover that.
Yeah, I think that some SEOs just see indexing as, well, my content's quality.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know what? Does it matter?
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of those things. Like they say, if a tree falls in the wood, does it make a sound? And I'm like, who cares? That's my answer. Like, no, like, who cares? We don't know if, like, if there's no one in the woods, then who cares about whether or not it made a sound? You can make the most beautiful content in the entire world, the most helpful content, the most amazing, the most, you know, high quality, high authority, et cetera. If the page isn't indexable, it's not going to be like, people can't find it. If it doesn't have links to it, people can't find it. And big things like that. And I think that, you know, with indexing, it's very important to make sure that your sitemap is good. And at Wix, we spend a lot of time on sitemaps and making sure that they're dynamic. I'm sure that you, as an SEO and the history of SEO, one of the first things whenever anyone comes to me is like, oh, can you help me with your SEO? The first thing I do is look for their sitemap and see if it exists. because very often it doesn't, particularly if they're self-built. If it exists, if it's been updated, because you often see like self-built sites where they haven't updated it in years. And if it's dynamic, that's the other thing that we always track, because a lot of things, particularly with some of the feeds, which help with indexing, like for instance, if you have products and you're struggling to get your products indexed, one of the things you can do is you can upload it to Google, you can upload the feed to Google Merchant Center. And I've seen that make an instantaneous difference. On Wix, we have an integration and you can just connect the code and it's really easy. And I've seen it make a difference like pretty much within the week. So we submit it on the Monday and we're indexed by the Wednesday. I've seen that happen. So that can make a real big difference. So if you don't have a dynamic sitemap, for instance, it's very difficult for you to be able to benefit from some of those feeds. Things like the ones for content. I think it's a content API. I want to say. We can reference it later. But the one for Google for Jobs, for instance, that needs dynamic feed. You know, if you've got your RSS, for instance, that's also dynamic, and that can help with indexing as well. So all of these feeds need to be updated as the content updates in order to let Google know how often they should crawl your site, you know, what kind of content they should expect, and it helps them to understand which elements they need as well. So if you have good feed management, if you have good you know, content management and good you know, infrastructure there, that will help with indexing because you're helping Google to help you.
Yeah, with you working at Wix, do you get access to like the global stats data of what's happening? And I mean, you know, do you get to dive into the realities of what's going on?
We can see some trends for research purposes, but they're normally to do with sort of people using different parts of the tools. So for instance, when we built the redirects manager, we could see that millions of people were using that straight away. So we have an auto redirect tool, which when somebody changes their URL, we auto redirect it, and we can see how many people are using that. We have other tools that we roll out, and we can monitor how often people are engaging with that. And that helps us to refine the tools, to improve the tools, to make the tools more visible to people, and things like that. In terms of search data, I have a few sites that I work on, and people know that I'm working on them. I've got permission to work on them and things. And we keep track in that perspective. But I think that in terms of data, the data sets, we have them for monitoring, but it's not we currently don't have them publicly available, so I can't share too much here.
Yeah, I mean, okay, obviously you can't share specific details, but when you mention trends there, do you see any particular trend happening or any trends happening that could be improved, basically?
So we found a lot of people engaging, for instance, with our AI tools. So we've added AI, as we added a particular thing called Create with AI Text, for instance, across the editor. So if people aren't familiar with Wix, there's basically two parts to the sort of core product. So there's the editor, which is where you would edit the page and update things like that, and visible elements, and for static pages, you can do some of the content as well. And then there's the dashboard, and the dashboard is where you would do some of more of the admin things. And we have a lot of business solutions there. We recently added the Create with AI text across our editor significantly, and we're seeing a lot of people interacting with that. We've also added AI tools into the images, the image creator. We also have Create with AI text for a few of the pieces of copy in the manager as well. We are generally seeing people being very, very engaged with those particular tools, which suggests to us, what I think we're seeing in the wider marketing sphere, which is that everyone's really interested in AI and how they can use AI to, streamline their marketing workflows and make things better that way. So I think that's probably one of the most significant ones we're seeing lately. And we're hoping to as a company, we're hoping to build on that as part of our tools and across our tool sets.
Right. So you mentioned AI and content there. Recently, I've had quite a few content people, content copywriters, all that saying that their business has totally plummeted for obvious reasons, for online, and basically people don't seem to want to invest into manually written content as much as they used to because of obviously GPT and all these AI tools. Do you think there's a fine balance between using a tool to help streamline and totally taking over?
Yeah, I think my general advice with regards to AI is that you should use AI to amplify your actual intelligence. Like that's what it should be. In my experience, and I've tested this on a topic that I was on figs. Right. I was making a test site on figs because I like figs and I like pictures of figs. And I was doing a test site on this, and I spun up some content from GPT about figs. And then I was going around checking on, like, fact checking some of this stuff, and it was complete nonsense. They were just making up information about, agricultural history of figs and things like that. So I think that the way that people are managing content and the way that people are expecting to engage with content is changing. And I think that AI is a tool within that. And I think that when you use it as a tool to, again, amplify your intelligence, then it will help you to get great results. So for instance, you're seeing a lot of people who are now hiring for like AI content editors, AI content fact checkers, AI content support. And I've heard from other teams who were managing sort of content teams, and they originally saw a drop in when ChatGPT sort of made its first big splash sort of last year, really. They saw a sort of drop in initial inquiries, and then they sort of saw a few people coming back with different inquiries. So people saying, how can you help me make this AI better? We had a podcast with Kim Garst on SERPSUP, and she was talking about how she uses AI to help her refine tone of voice when she's working with clients. So she has a particular method. She explains it very well in the podcast. I highly recommend checking it out, where, they plug in using ChatGPT, plug it into sort of assess the brand voice for a particular, you plug in samples. And I actually went through this myself, but you plug in samples of writing and you use it to train GPT on your tone of voice. And then you give it prompts, tasks to do in your tone of voice. So write a tweet like this, write a blog topic that speaks to this tone of voice, that sort of thing. And essentially, people who are using AI in that way are able to sort of stay ahead of the curve because it is artificial, right? Like at the end of the day, like it is artificial. It's essentially, you know, a predictive text, like at hyperspeed. And that's great. And that's wonderful. And that can help you with a lot of things. I recently had to come up with something and I was like A to Z, this and this and this, or A to Z on a particular topic. And I plugged in ChatGPT and I was like, what is A to Z of this and this and this? And instead of me sitting there going, oh, is it this? Is it that? Is it that? Is it that? It gave me a full list of A to Z. And I was like, well, I don't like Q and I don't like R and I don't like T, but most of those I can use for this particular piece of marketing copy. And then I was able to, you know, go through and actually, you know, use my actual intelligence to fill in the other bits that I needed. However, I think that, you know, I've heard people say you won't be replaced by AI, you'll be replaced by a marketer using AI. And I think that in terms of the way that the roles are changing, we work in tech, and one of the things I love about working in tech is that, you know, you're always working on something new. There's always a new thing to work on. So we were doing Core Web Vitals, we're not, and you know, with like certain things, and now we're looking at IMP, for instance. Like that's something to think about. You know, now there's ChatGPT and other AI text creators to consider. But there's also things that like video, for instance, is a great tool that where you add in a video and then it pulls out little vignettes for you, without you having to sit there and you know, chop and change and like set up all of those different things. So I think it's really, really useful. I think Loom also added an AI tool an AI summary to their tools and allows you to sort of summarize your video so you don't have to type it all up. And it's actually pretty good. So I think that try to figure out how you can include if you're in an area that's sensitive, and there are plenty of areas where you know it's sensitive to sort of AI advances. I think try to figure out how you can include it in your workflow rather than fighting against it, because I think that there is still absolutely a place for good copywriters. But essentially, you know, I know someone who started off with AI originally, and they were saying, oh my God, this is taking as long as briefing a tool and like briefing an exec or briefing a copywriter or something like that. And that was her original sort of thing. But a couple of months in, she's like, I'm publishing like this, you know, a bunch of articles now. She's able to accelerate her publishing, and it's good quality. But she's able to accelerate it because she's got a sort of workflow that includes AI. We had a webinar with Ross Hudgens, and he was talking about some of the ways that they use it. So you can take let's say you had a big data set, you could take the data set and you could give them like the data set and say, write a summary of this data set, write a summary of this data set, write a summary of that data set, so that you've got a report written up like really, really quickly. So there's lots of different ways that you can use it. And I would advise anyone who is feeling a little overwhelmed to sort of pick one and go with it. For me, the discussion with Kim Garst and the discussion with Ross Hudgens and also Mike King was on that discussion as well, were particularly pivotal for sort of calming down the sort of space, because I think there's with AI, there's so many things coming at us from everywhere. And everyone's like, oh, I've got this new tool. I have that new tool. I have that new tool. And it can be a little bit overwhelming, but I think pick one and have a go at a couple of strategies. And yeah, I think it can work. And also don't be afraid to sort of like layer the tools. So the team from DeviantArt recently started a tool called DreamUp, which is an image generator, an AI image generator. Which is great for people who really struggle to like get images for their blogs, which is a great optimization for SEO. And I was struggling to write prompts. I'm awful at writing prompts for images. I tried Midjourney and all of my images came out terrible. However, I went into GPT and I said, this is the prompt that I want. Can you make it better for an image generator? And it wrote me this great prompt for an image generator. And I put that back into DreamUp and it was way better than my original prompt. And I did some editing and things to make it more of what I needed. However, you know, don't forget to layer them. In Wix, for instance, we have Velo, which I know that you're familiar with, Mark, because you've built some fantastic tools on Velo. Velo has an assistant. So if you, it's essentially a JavaScript framework, and you can write JavaScript and you can write JavaScript tools, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, build variables and things like that. And I've had a situation where I wanted to build something, but I'm not a developer. my JavaScript is okay. And so I put this in and I got an error. It will tell you if you've gone wrong. So it will give you an error code and say, this isn't right because this isn't this. So then I told ChatGPT, hey, they told me this code is wrong because of this, this, and this. And then they fixed my code and then I put it back and then I got a different error code. And then so you can layer the two if you want to get some great results. But yeah, I think use it as a tool, like any other tool. Use it as a tool. Don't use it as a replacement necessarily, but use it as a tool. And my favorite thing is like cleaning up data and writing spreadsheet formulas, because any time that I can save from arguing with a spreadsheet is a win in my book.
Oh, 100% on that. I think there is a fine balance here. You know, it's a fine balance. It's not to try and replace what you're doing, but how can you just use it to help you, you know, in the everyday space? You mentioned your podcast there with Moda. Now, I listened to the one with Ram Fishkin and all about the, you know, understanding the audience themselves. And I'm a very big believer in, you know, I think there's a bit of a disconnection between SEO data and really understanding the customers, you know. And I think that from your perspective, do you think that SEOs need to start thinking more about, well, what's really important, instead of let's just write something because this SEO tool says people search it?
Yeah. So I've got an article on the Wix SEO Hub, how to do user first topic and keyword research for SEO, precisely because of this. So I think that one of the things that SEO tools are great. They're fantastic. They're wonderful. But one of the things that's tricky about SEO tools is that they're leaning on historical data. So for instance, if it's a new topic, if it's a new keyword, you're not going to get that much historical data. And if you're in a space that's highly competitive, from an SEO point of view, being a first mover is really, really important. Also, if you are a brand and you're specifically like, if you're looking to support the people who are engaging with your brand, getting information from those people is going to help you do much, much better. And there might not even be that much search volume for that particular topic because it's so niche to your brand. However, if you make that content, that provides so much value, because as a user, like let's say, I don't know, I had this microphone that I'm talking into right now, and there's a particular knob or dial on this that is unique to this microphone. Well, there's not going to generally be any competition around that particular dial. However, if the people who made this microphone say, oh, you can use this dial to do this, this, and this, or this is important because of that, that, and that. And I'm looking at this dial and I'm going, what is this dial? And I type in, what is this dial? Then guess what? If you as the brand have that piece of content on your website, you're going to show top. There might be other people who are talking about it on other web pages, but you will show at the top because you are the authority on your microphone that you created, on your product that you created. So in the user first document that I, or article that I have on the Wix SEO Hub, I talk about like talking to your sales team. And also if you have a sales team, they will not be shy. They will tell you oh, I need something on this. I need like, and Mark, I'm sure you've had these conversations like working with marketing teams. The sales teams always have opinions on which content needs to be on the web page.
Yeah, it's realistically just understanding, well, what are the commonalities on your sales calls? What right. things are you saying over and over and over again that people right. need to know? For me, it's a case of, what do people need to know to make an informed decision?
Right, right. Precisely. And yeah, if you find yourself repeating it all the time, if you say, oh, hey, actually, I have a web page for that, that makes you look so organized. It makes you look so good. And then also the people that you're talking to can send that to the other people in their team really easily, and you don't have to record another thing or write another email or do all of that sort of stuff. So, and that, again, that shows like that shows that people were ready for you. We're ready for that query. We know you, we know what you need. We've anticipated your needs. So that provides so much value from a sort of customer service point of view, but also from a search point of view, because it's so niche to your website. You're absolutely going to show on the top for that. If somebody is querying that generally. But yeah, also the customer care queries are ones that come up a lot. Training gaps are a really good opportunity. So if you find that you're training juniors on how to use a particular topic or like use a particular skill or tool, and they keep asking you the same question and your training doesn't explain it, and you can't find something that you can send them, then you should probably write something up so that you can reference it for your juniors, and so that they can reference it themselves, and so that, you know, anybody else who might need that information can find it as well. I think that things like that are really useful. The questions from Google Business Profile, that is a goldmine. All of the internal search. I know so many SEOs who just absolutely love internal search. It's great for creating blogs, but also creating new product categories, for instance. And I think that there's tons of things that you can look at that are things that people are saying. And I think the great thing about it is that this is what Google is asking for. So Google's talking about helpful content, user first content, content that you know satisfies a need. And they keep elevating things like Reddit, and things like, you know, sort of forum-based Quora and things like that, because they're like, you know, questions that people are asking, and then they're being answered in a specific way. So I think that when you can create content that is based on a need, and you know the need, like you know the need from your team or from, you know, the questions they're asking you, you know, from the site searches, from Amazon product reviews, if you know that there is a need, then you don't necessarily need search volume to back you up on that. You have a need, and you can even think about like the time that your team is saving from having to, you know, write up that email every time or having to restate the point every single time. You can even think about it from that point of view as well.
Yeah, I mean, just on one scenario, I was working with one company, and I said, well, what things do you usually get asked all the time? They say, oh yeah, well, we just do what we do. They said, but, you know, so they don't realize that it's important. And until you ask them, they're not going to actively tell you this is important. And from that one conversation, I think it were about a half an hour conversation, so much was outlined and created a blog post out of the one of the topics they mentioned. Now, the SEO tools said no one searches it. That right. One blog post generates something like 3,500 visitors a month.
That's what I'm talking about, Mark. That's what I'm talking about. That's precisely what I'm talking about. Exactly. Exactly. You know the need. You know the need is there. And you know that you have people that want that information. So give them the information and reap the benefits. That's what I'm talking about.
Definitely, definitely. Now, you mentioned right at the beginning that you do a lot of speaking.
Yeah.
Right? What makes you tick? You know, when you're on there, what gives you that enthusiasm to want to do this?
So I tend to jump around in terms of my topics a little bit, but one of the thing that's core to almost all of my talks is that like it's normally something that I feel like people aren't talking about, and that I feel like people should be talking about. So I hope to sort of kickstart a conversation. So at MozCon this year, for instance, I talked about like on-page video SEO, because there's lots of stuff about like YouTube SEO. There's lots of stuff about on-page SEO, but how do you optimize the videos that are on your page for like the videos you embed onto your page for SEO? And there wasn't a lot of content around that. And Google in the last year has spent a lot of time investing in adding more videos to the SERP, changing how videos are showing on the SERP. And there's been a lot of stuff around that. And I've seen a lot of good impact on that. And in Google Search Console, they added like a whole another panel for video pages, and they've added lots more documentation about how to get those video pages and how to optimize those video pages. And I felt like people weren't talking about that, so I talked about that. The year before, I talked about visual search and Google Lens, because I felt lots of people were saying, oh yeah, you just update your alt tags. And I was like, no, it's not just that. It's part of it. Sure, of course, they're paying attention to that. But if you want to rank on Google Lens, then you have to take into other considerations as well. I did a talk about discovered, not indexed, because I find that it's so frustrating. It's like you pour your heart and soul into this blog and Google goes, yeah, seen it. You're like, so what do you think? And they're like, good. And I'm like, what do you mean? You saw it, but not indexed. They're like, nah. I don't like that. So I fell into that was one of the things that got me like sort of really that was one of the things that sort of got me really, really into my sort of indexing things as well. I think I sort of go in spurts of like different topics that I really, really narrow into. And then I go, yeah, okay, good. I know that. Once you know the core of it, you can sort of top up as things change and as things move along. But sort of that was when I was sort of zeroing in on a lot of those sort of indexing conversations and had been for a few months. I did a talk on schema markup for my first Brighton SEO, because there wasn't that many people talking about schema markup, and schema is brilliant. It's like one of my favorite go-to moves. I absolutely love schema so much. And I think that lots of people talk about it now. But I think at the time there weren't so many people talking about it then. So yeah, I think I tend to be sort of spurred on by conversations that I think we should be having. And I hope that other people take them up as well and run with them as well.
Yeah. So, on that basis, that there's so many things in the industry that doesn't get talked about, you know, right. that make a massive impact. You know, yeah. There's lots of things of the same thing that gets talked about.
Yeah.
But these sort of things that, you know, and often it's something that you find by mistake.
Right.
That's honest.
Right. Right, precisely. It's sort of like buried in the documentation or something to that effect, or you know, or I don't know. I think I recently did an article on schema structured data validation. And the reason why I wrote this was because I get so many people who are like, oh, I got a warning on my schema markup. Oh, what do I do? Like, oh, this is the end of the world. And I'm like, maybe not. Like, it might be fine. It might be totally fine. Is it valid? Like, is it overall valid? It's like, yes. It's like, then you have a warning. It's like, yes. It's like, well, maybe it's an issue, but maybe it's not. Like, you don't necessarily need to freak out if you get one of those little yellow warnings. Like, check it, have a look and everything, but you don't necessarily need to freak out. And I think a lot of people get sort of very confused and very sort of, oh no, what do I do? This is very techie sort of thing. And it's not that complicated. You know, it takes some time, spend some time and get used to it. But yeah, I wrote that partially because like, I felt like I didn't have a place to point people when they asked me those questions, and I couldn't find one that was there as well. And I think that there's a lot of going over the same ground, but there's so much ground to cover in SEO. I think it's important that we try to shine a light where we can.
Yeah, one of the commonalities I get asked regarding schema from SEOs is, well, how do I know what schema type to add to which page? What do I use? Do I just put this schema on every page, or what do I do? And it's like, well, surely if it's a product page, you should be using product schema. No, it's something related to that. For me, I don't know. It's just, maybe I'm weird, but I just think, well, isn't it obvious?
I think there's some folks who get nervous about documentation. I personally love schema.org. That's like one of my favorite websites. I spend so much time on schema.org. And I think their documentation is really, really clear. And also I think that the other thing I spend a lot of time is looking at other people's schema and just going, oh, that's very interesting how they configured that. And oh, I like that.
So I think if you're one of these people that spends your spare time just like checking out, like, you know, Jason LD, then yeah, I think it's easier. But I think with one of the other things I love about SEO is that it's such a wide gambit of skills that are super useful in SEO. So if you're really good at organizing, it can be incredibly useful to have somebody who can help make sure that you're streamlining your workflows in SEO, because that can make a big difference, particularly at an agency and when you're running a team. And also, I think, like, you know, content folks, there are some people who you're like, oh, can you write me like a 3,000 word blog post tomorrow? And they're like, yeah, got you, done. You say, write me a 3,000 word blog post tomorrow, I'd be like, I don't know. And then I have to, and what will I do? If you say, you know, audit this website tomorrow, I'd be like, I can do that tonight. No worries. I can do that in like 3 hours. I can give you some actionable tips or whatever for that audit. I can give you something valuable within a few hours. And it's not a big stressor for me. So I think, whereas I know other people who really find technical SEO really, really stressful. So I think that it's, I think, you know, it's a rich community. So we can help the folks who struggle with schema. They can help them. They can help us with our content.
So yeah, definitely. I mean, I've published two books myself, and both times it started with me sitting there wanting to write an article for my website. But me being me, I kind of got carried away. And next thing I think, oh, this is a bit too long now for an article. Let's just expand on it and turn it into a book.
There you go. And the world's a better place because of it. So there we go.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, what actually makes you tick when it comes to SEO?
I like being right. I like, you ever seen that movie? I think the movie The Sandlot, it's a very American movie about kids playing baseball and stuff. And they talk about the great Bambino, Babe Ruth, and how he before he hit his home run, he'd point at the side and go right over there. And then he'd hit the ball and it'd go right over there. And like, I like that. I like that feeling when I'm like, we're going to write this article and we're going to optimize this article so that it knocks this competitor off of the pedestal. And we write the article, we optimize the article, we publish the article, and boom, featured snippet. Like, what? That's that. I love that. I love that. I love like getting the results. I love the, like, when you like say, oh, we're going to optimize this whole section, and we're going to get all of these different rich results, and it's going to be like boom, 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 boom. And then you publish it and you like hit go, and then it all goes. When you say we're going to sort out the indexing, and you run it on Monday, and then on Wednesday, like the pages are all, then you see all those greens coming up on Google Search Console. I love that. Like, I love the green arrows. I love seeing all of the, I love doing the research, making a hypothesis, and then making it happen. I really like that as a process. I love the sort of scientificness of SEO. I find it incredibly satisfying because I think that so many things can be sort of be, I don't know, very qualitative or very qualitative or whatever. And I really like that we can quantify, you know, okay, this many people came to this site. You know, this is going to work for that. You know, like that result that you got from that team where you're like, where they were saying, you know, they're asking us loads of questions. And you can say, well, look, this gets 3,000, this is getting 3,000 people visiting it every year or every month. Like, that's a great article for you. That I think is a really good thing. I like being able to show the value of the work as well.
Yeah, I mean, it goes past just seeing how many visitors things get. You know, for me, way back, I started in the industry by building my own lead generation business. So my purpose of every website I created was to drive leads. And in order to do that, I needed to connect with the audience and understand the pain points and solve them with the content. Mm-hmm. For me, it's kind of, I think the industry's just, I don't know, in some cases, they're just getting round to that idea rather than keywords, rankings, traffic.
Oh, yeah. I think in the same way as AI, like all of those things are metrics for like good value. Because the other thing is that when, particularly if you're working with a business, I've had it before where we had loads of traffic and things, but it wasn't actually materializing in leads.
And, you know, you can't pay the bills with clicks. You have to be able to connect those business metrics to the website metrics. There needs to be a very clear flow. Like if it's a lead, if it's, a sign up, if it's a purchase, whatever it is, you need to be able to make sure that the SEO outcomes are reflective of your business outcomes. And I think that the research aspect of SEO, is, I think, super, super valuable. I think sometimes people think that SEO, sits in a silo and, you know, it's just the stuff that goes on the website. But as you said, SEOs have an incredible insight into audiences. We are looking at what people are thinking, essentially, because that's what people are searching. You have a thought in your head, and then you search it up. You say, "Oh, you know, I wonder how much a panda does weigh," and then you Google like how much does a panda weigh, and then you find that out. And so we know how many people are wondering about the weight of pandas. Like we know that from like search volumes, for instance. We can get an a guide on that, and we can see trends with Google Trends. We can see which topics people are interested in, and you know whether or not that's something trends up or whether or not there's some seasonality to it, and things like that. And we can give people insights into customers that you can't get in a lot of other ways. And I think that is incredibly valuable. And that is something that I think SEOs should think about when they're speaking to wider teams as well. So when you're talking to, you know, PR teams, when you're talking to sales teams, when you're talking to wider marketing teams, the audience insights that you're able to share and able to glean are really, really important. And I think in terms of clicks and in terms of traffic and in terms of keywords and all of those sorts of things and ranking isn't an end all be all of itself. Ranking is Google ranks you essentially like relative to the value that you have for customers. So what they're trying to do is deliver valuable content to their customers. And so you rank because your pages are valuable. If your pages are not valuable for whatever reason, then they're not going to rank as well. So for instance, you know, the keywords are so that people can find it, right? It's useful, for instance, when you're thinking about, I remember writing an article or writing an essay or something at school, and I used the wrong terminology for something. And my teacher was like, "No, it's called this." And I was like, why can call it whatever I want? I don't know what you mean when you say like, why can't I? It's my essay. I can call it what I want. But actually, if you don't have the same term, then people can't find it. Like you can't reference what other people have said about that particular thing, for instance. So like sneakers or trainers or like I'm American and living in England, and like, you know, a boot is different. Cilantro and coriander are two different things. If you went to America and you went to a supermarket and you said, "Do you have any coriander?" you wouldn't be able to find it because people wouldn't know what you were talking about. So it's important that keywords are something that they're essentially breadcrumbs. They're essentially like a tool for users to find what you need, or what they need. And it's a tool for users to understand that the content is valuable for you. I can't remember how many times I've searched for something and then got the header or whatever said the word I was looking for, or said the thing I was looking for. And then I got to the page and I couldn't find it on the page. And that I find incredibly frustrating, right? Nobody wants that. You want the thing that you came looking for. So I think it's important to remember that all of these things that we do, even the technical SEO stuff. So for instance, if you're doing schema markup, it's not good practice to have schema markup that doesn't reflect what is on the page, right? If you have a recipe about chocolate cake, your schema markup should not be a pizza recipe. It should not. It doesn't matter whether the pizza recipe works better or not. Your recipe for chocolate cake should be the recipe that's in the schema markup, should be the recipe that's on the page. And that's all of that is to give value to users. So that recipe schema, for instance, will show on the SERP, which will tell people, "Oh, this is a good recipe. It's got a picture, it's got reviews, it's got, you know, this many eggs are in it," or whatever. And that will tell them, "Oh, that's good value." Then they'll go to the site and they'll go, "Oh, this is a good recipe. This is a good user experience. There's not a bunch of ads popping up and I don't have to wade through 7,000 words about somebody's grandmother before I get to the chocolate chip cookie recipe," that sort of thing. So I think it's important to remember that all of those metrics are all signals for customer value, and customer value is what matters at the end.
Yeah, I'm a bit crazy or whatever you want to call it, but I like to dig deep into meanings of words and everything. Mm-hmm. And I like to go into analyzing a page in depth and the words on the page. And well, if I change that word to that, what's the impact kind of thing? And yeah. Just as in one example, I changed the word only to just and increased the conversion rate.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just like the just the meanings of words, and I've, you know, studied things, and that's how in depth I sort of go into. But I right. think, you know, it's not words are not just words. It's like we need to start thinking about, well, what do these words actually mean?
Right, precisely. And I think on the SEO Hub, we have a fantastic, the Wix SEO Hub, we have a fantastic article about implicit intent. And if you think about somebody who's looking for, say, like things to do on a rainy day, there's an implicit intent that that person wants to be inside, right? They haven't said that they want to be indoors, but if they said rainy day, they mean indoors. You don't have to, and so when you think about like what that means, you need to understand like what you need to understand like that there is an intent to be inside. So and it might be that some people like swimming out like in the sea on a rainy day, but like most people would probably be inside, like to be at the cinema or something like that instead. So I think that it's important to remember and understand those things and to actually know what it is you're talking about. And I think that's why Google added the expertise element to their EEAT thing, because you know, sometimes without sharing too much, I'm lactose intolerant, and I've looked up various different things about like, oh, could this concern my health? Like, oh, what's an issue of being lactose intolerant? And they literally all say the same thing, and you can tell that all of these people all read the same article and they all referenced the same article when they were writing up this SEO content about this particular topic. However, if there was somebody who was like, I have not eaten dairy for 20 years and I have had this issue and I've had that issue, or I have not had this issue and I've not had that issue, that's important. That's useful. That is valuable. That is useful, important content. And that's different from content that's just based on something that someone read. And I think, you know, I know that you recently welcomed a grandson and things. And I know that when you're raising children, people have a lot of opinions. but it's actually more useful to get more advice or to get experience from people when they're talking about like how, you know, family stuff and things like that. You know, oh, I had this experience with my son was learning to drive. He did this, that, and the other. Like, that's useful. That's useful. Like if they say, oh, when you learn to drive, you've got to do that sort of thing. That's like, I don't know, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But your experience is true. You can't, like, your experience is what your experience was. And me listening to your experience, I can take whatever kernels of knowledge and whatever things that are useful to me from that. But I think that experience can make a big difference and to whether or not we are able to understand the meaning behind the things that we write, and can help make it easier for Google to understand the things that we're writing.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the time is rocking on, and I know you're a very busy person, but just to conclude, is there anything you feel the audience needs to know that we haven't spoke about already?
I don't know. I guess the one thing I always say when people say like, oh, is there what's the one piece of SEO advice you would give is, and I'm not sure that that's particularly what you're asking here, but the thing I always say is like, put an H1 on your homepage. And the reason why I say that is because so many people overlook that. And essentially what that's saying is that like, don't forget the basics. I think particularly with SEO and even with marketing, and of course with like interacting with like human beings, don't forget the basics. Say please. Say thank you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do like make sure that you've covered your basic elements. And often, in the process of fixing your basics, understanding your basics, for instance, you can uncover sort of other issues. Like sometimes, very often, like they can be emblematic of issues that are also affecting the sort of wider things. Like I was checking on some redirects the other day, and I found that actually there was a menu that was messed up because it had an old menu in it. So that's something that you know that I wouldn't have found if I hadn't just been checking on the basic things about like, oh, you know, making sure we didn't have internal 301s. Like that's a super basic task, but it uncovered some
something that was more complex. So absolutely cover the basics. Don't forget the basics, and don't let anyone tell you that covering the basics isn't something that's useful.
Wonderful. And on that note, where can people find you and what conversations would you like to have?
So I'm on Twitter. I'm going to keep calling it Twitter, at Crystal on the Web. I'm also on LinkedIn and you can find me there. I like talking about schema markup, in particular, technical SEO things. I'm also in the Women in Tech SEO Slack group, and I'm very active there. So hit me up there if you have any questions about things like that as well. And I'm also on our podcast, which comes out weekly, and our webinars, which come out monthly, and you can ask questions in the webinars as well. So do feel free to drop by there.
And on that note, many, many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.